Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Hey, what's this I hear about Brent getting that plum of a job? Dave's friend Rick slapped him on the shoulder. Not bad for a young man just starting out. Well, that part's pretty nice, Dave said, rubbing his chin. But it's the rest of the equation that worries me. Rick wrinkled his brow. Huh? It's just that he's moving back home, and that's something we sure didn't expect. Cuts in on the old romance, eh? Rick grinned. Dave shook his head. I just don't understand what it is with these kids today. When we were starting out, we roomed in crummy places with a bunch of guys and saved every cent. But still, at least we were independent. Yeah, I know, Rick sighed. Seems like all Tracy's friends are moving home, too. Although sometimes I think it's better for the girls. At least we can feel they're safe. I don't know, Dave shook his head. When are these kids supposed to grow up? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about boomerang kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has experience with boomerang kids both professionally and personally. Maxine Penn is a clinical social worker who has practiced in the Washington area for the last 30 years. She has trained and specialized in the psychotherapeutic treatment of children, adolescents, and families. She no longer treats little children, but she certainly enjoys them. In fact, she is the grandmother of six. She has had all three of her sons boomerang at one point or another on their paths to maturity, marriage, living, and working independently. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Maxine.
Well, thank you so much, Linda and Sandy, and thank you for inviting me today.
Maxine, it seems we're seeing a new phenomenon these days, boomerang kids. Young adults in their 20s who, after obtaining college degrees or their first jobs, decide to move back home and live with their parents. How widespread an occurrence is this?
Well, it's more widespread than you might think. Although, one of the things that we have to consider when we think about the statistics is that culturally, there are many types of families, for instance, Asian families, Hispanic families, Indian families, where moving home after your education is the rule rather than the exception because you're supposed to move home till you get married. And so many of these kids are also included in the statistic. But the statistic is quite shocking. According to various whoever you consult, it could be up to 85% of college graduates are moving back home. This includes children who move back home for economic reasons, and I'll discuss that in a moment, kids who move back home for psychological and those kinds of issues, kids who don't finish college and move back home for drug and emotional problem and social problem reasons, and kids who never left, for whom we count them as living in the home as adults.
Is this a huge jump from what we all remember as what was the norm, or is it just that we're now keeping better statistics?
I think we're keeping better statistics because it's so widespread, but it's up from 67% in 2006, and it keeps on increasing. Kids have always moved back home, sometimes temporarily, sometimes for the summer after college, sometimes for a short amount of time. Some kids have never left. Grandmothers have always raised grandchildren in different groups. But I think that the shocking increase is in college-educated children of middle and upper middle class parents who are moving back home.
Why do you think that this is happening?
For, I think, a couple of reasons. The first reason that I think is the usual reason given is economics. This is a lousy economy for people starting out in jobs. There are few jobs that pay well for young people in starter jobs. Now, there are many young people who don't think they should be in starter jobs. They think they should be running the company. However, one of the higher unemployment rates is that there's a 25% unemployment rate for young people between the ages of 20 and 25. So these kids, A, if they can get jobs, can get low-paying jobs, which make it very difficult to live independently economically. Another reason is that even if they can afford to live independently economically, as you said in your opening story, Sandy, they live in junky places without good mom's cooking and without dad's car and without a gas card and without the economic supports that come with living at home. It's often not as comfortable, as warm, or as appealing as living with mom and dad. So they don't. And I think a third reason might be that some people have raised their children, I guess they're called helicopter parents, mm-hmm. perhaps, who raise their kids with an awful lot of support so that kids grow up actually fearing and believing that they can't live by themselves or really take care of themselves. So they feel it's a necessity to move back home with mom and dad.
Does that prolong the helicopter parenting?
For some people, I think it does. There's a funny article that was in Shouts and Murmurs in The New Yorker last May, prior to college graduation time. And it talked about young people moving back home. And it says, I'll read you a part of it. It says, "What do I feed my college graduate? Most college graduates are vegetarians and will become cranky or upset if offered meat. They have irregular eating habits. Most prefer to skip family meals, but if you stock the refrigerator and the cabinets with snacks, they'll usually be able to eat on their own." So it goes on to say, "Why is my college graduate so fussy? It's normal for college graduates to be fussy. It means that they feel frightened, vulnerable, or confused. You can usually get to the root of the problem by consulting this checklist." And I think this checklist is a satire. Did somebody suggest that he look for work? Check yes or no. Did the subject of graduate school come up? Check yes or no. Has he been to a scary job interview? Yes or no. Did he see a scary LSAT book? Yes or no. Did his rock band not get signed? Yes or no. Was he asked to help around the house? Yes or no. Then it goes on with this quiz, and it says, "Does your college graduate have enough cigarettes? Yes or no. Did you remember to fill her wallet with cash? Yes or no. Does she have internet access? Yes or no. Has she had her daily nap? Yes or no," The New Yorker says. But it is an issue, and I think that they satirize helicopter parenting with people worrying about, oh, my dear, this person has to spend all their time prepping for thinking about graduate school, or maybe I'll make them unhappy. I won't prepare the food they like. Or maybe they'll make me unhappy because they won't tell me if they're coming home for dinner or not.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on Boomerang Kids.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Maxine Penn about Boomerang Kids. How is this situation different from the maturing patterns of young adults in earlier decades? I know the parenting was probably different, but was there a different way of having things happen?
Well, think about it for yourselves to some extent. I think I personally, decades ago, would not have thought of wanting to come home, although I did get married. So people got married earlier. So they often went from dad to husband or mom to married life. And I think that's one factor. I think in tough times, which there have been before, people have moved back home for economic reasons, but haven't stayed as long. I think it hasn't been as comfortable at home. Parents sometimes have been older, and it's just not in my memory as a clinician that it has been a problem that it is today. I don't know statistically, but I do think that it has way increased, and it may be because of economics and kids' expectations.
When I was graduating from college and starting graduate school, I had transferred back to a local university, and so I was living at home. And I lived at home through graduate school, and then it was thinking about, well, am I going to be moving out? I got married shortly after that, so I did move out. But my parents did not want me, a young woman alone, living in an apartment.
You know, it's funny because I wanted to live in an apartment my senior year of college. And my parents said, my mother, not my father, my mother said, oh, you don't have your degree. You can't live in an apartment. What would that do? Do I hang it on the door? And I.
Well, it was different.
Are there milestones that we generally use to sort of check off if somebody sort of got to be a grown-up or is doing whatever it is that goes on the road to being a grown-up?
Well, how many young people do you think actually do their own college applications? How many young people do you think just take the SATs without prep courses? How many young people help support themselves and pay college loans? And college loans, by the way, I think are a big economic reason for people moving back home because they do have really big college loans that need to be paid off and sometimes aren't willing to do some of the jobs, for instance, that would make the college loans disappear faster. Some of the public service jobs, Teach for America, working for the government, doing some things reduce college, particularly government college loans, and some kids don't want to do them.
So what are the effects of this delayed independence on the young people, on their families, on our society?
Big. I think that one of the things that parents now think about is, oh, my dear, what's the effect on my children? But in fact, what's the effect on the family with one or two children moving back in? Does it prolong financial dependence? Does it, in fact, the money that's spent and having the kids live at home prevent families from doing what they plan to do when they retire? Does it prolong the time where they can retire because they don't? Instead of saving money and stashing money away for their own retirement, they're paying for kids to live at home or underwrite their expenses or give them money for going out or do things where they don't save and protect themselves in a way that they should financially. I think it leads to emotional strains. Many couples argue about time for the kid to get out. No, but he's not ready. And how can we send him out? The cruel world will eat him up. So I think that on parents, it has an effect. And I think it has an effect on kids. The shortest answer is that it prolongs a period of dependence, which doesn't lead to the next stage of development, which is I'm a grown-up and I can take care of myself.
Is the pattern of maturing just taking longer, or is it actually changing? You know how we're all living longer, so are some of these points on the scale taking longer because of other things?
I think it's taking longer, and I don't know why. I haven't seen enough clinically or read enough to know what's actually taking longer. I think that there is an increased pathologizing of learning styles so that kids get help with things that in the past they just had to learn how to do. Learning disabilities are recognized earlier and treated earlier sometimes, and that's good. On the other hand, parents often feel my child has some problem that they are stuck with forever and have to overcome, so I have to baby them more. I have to nurture them more. There's something wrong.
Parents feel that kids are more vulnerable for an extended period of time.
Exactly. And I think things like independent travel or, you know, lots of kids go to Europe on trips when they're in high school, but they're supervised. But many suburban kids in Washington, for instance, don't take the metro downtown till they're seniors in high school because, oh, it's not safe. That's sort of new, but not entirely new for suburbia and suburban parents. I think there's an increase in drug use and drug addiction in upper middle class children. I think that, for instance, the drugs that are used for ADD, Adderall and Ritalin, are often taken by the person they're prescribed for, and they're also sold on college campuses as one of the biggest markets for illegal drugs of that nature. And a lot of kids become addicted to these drugs. Rather than marijuana being the only gateway drug that we talk about, some of these drugs also are gateway drugs, and kids leave college with a serious addiction and need to come back home because they need treatment and they need help because they really can't function on their own.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on Boomerang Kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Maxine Penn about Boomerang Kids. Can you give some examples of how this longer road to adulthood plays out for individual males and females?
Okay, let me tell you about Victoria, who lived in the Washington, D.C. area, went off to college in California, was quite successful in college, had a few difficulties with peers from time to time, but who doesn't, and spent 6 months in Kenya doing relief work, spent 2 summers in Uganda doing relief work, came back to this area, wanting very much to be a nurse so that she could go back to these countries and actually continue with the relief work and the help that she was doing with a skill that would be useful. So she came back home, and funny thing, most of her friends were in California and not here. She had a few friends left from high school, and she had no money, so she moved back in with mom and dad, who were quite happy to have her home. And turned out Victoria needed a chemistry course and a biochemistry course in order to apply to nursing school because she hadn't had it in college. So she was home for that year while she was taking those courses. And then she was home for the next year while she was getting ready to apply and take her exams, and finally left and moved to another city, but with her parents' financial support. So, you know, this prolongs her dependence. It keeps her from feeling as competent and useful as she might have been earlier. Prolongs her making a relationship, or extends the amount of time that she can feel like she's pursuing what she's really interested in, keeps her out of long-term relationships because she's got another goal beside getting married and having babies, and she's struggled.
As parents and caring adults, is there anything we should be doing to help facilitate the maturing process?
I think that there are a number of factors that parents need to consider when they're thinking about allowing their children to move back home. I have a list. So I think the first thing is that before anybody moves in, you have to have a serious discussion about why they're moving back, how they're going to save their money, what their career goals are. Are they going to prepare for graduate school? Are they going to look for a job? Are they going to look for a job with dad? Are they willing to do something less than run a major corporation? Parents need to set clear expectations about what the children's obligations are in terms of expenses, household chores, discuss whether they can have dates, whether they can have sleepovers. What are the parents really comfortable? It's the parents' house. It's not the kids' house. Kids think, oh, it's my house. It's been my house forever, and it's my old room, and it's my old bed, and I should get to do whatever I want to do because now I'm 21 or 22, and I'm an adult, and I don't have to call if I'm going to stay out all night, and of course my girlfriend can sleep over. And unless those expectations are made clear before the child moves in, and mom can do my laundry and cook for me too, even though I become a vegan and I don't even want milk in the refrigerator. So I think people have to say very clearly what the expectations are. You're going to pay for gas. Are you going to pay for entertainment? Are you expecting the child to get a job at McDonald's and work, even though it's way beneath their degree that they have? If you can, I think, which is harder with kids who have serious emotional or physical problems, you need to set a time limit. How long is this boomerang going to stay at its temporary destination? Is it really a temporary destination? Are they welcome forever? Are they welcome for a year? Are they welcome till they take an exam? How long are you going to pay their dental and their health insurance bills? Experts say that it's best for everyone to be on the same page in order to avoid the resentments that would arise if you have different assumptions. Parents need to think seriously about whether they're going to charge rent, whether they're going to charge the rent and save it so that the kid would have a down payment for first month's rent on their own, or whether they're going to use the money for the kid's food. But kids need to have some idea of the real world, which is that some of your salary goes toward paying rent. So I think I recommend paying rent. And I think that on the last on my list is that when you've made an agreement and when you've made a contract and when you've made a plan, you have to stick to it, which is hard sometimes.
Do you think that there should be a list that people sign?
I don't know. I don't think you can predict the future well enough to sign it. If a kid gets accepted for graduate school in September and the contract said they'd be gone by June, would you really not have them live there for the 2 months till they're going away to school? So I don't know about that. Some people might, if it's their style.
Are there resentments that also arise from what seems like a great deal for the kid? In other words, does a kid later on resent having been sort of cocooned for that long?
All of the developmental theorists that I know of talk about the idea that from very early infancy, one of the basic drives in life is toward independence. And when this drive is thwarted or stifled, either by the economy or by parents who don't think that a kid could really manage, or they really hate to see their kid living in a cold apartment or not have nice furniture, I don't know if the kids resent it, but it does thwart that drive for independence, which is what we assume about children when we first watch them go from crawling to walking, and we're very grateful that they can walk and we don't have to carry them anymore, because that's a step, literally, toward independence, which is what I would think the goal of growth and development and parenting might be.
Well, we could obviously go on talking about this for a much longer period of time, but we're coming to the end of our time. And for some of our listeners who want to further pursue some of the issues we've been discussing, what resources would you suggest?
The first one is, if you go to the internet and Google boomerang children or boomerang kids, you will get 10 Google pages of resources, articles, magazines, newspaper articles. A book that I found useful is called Grown Up Children Who Won't Grow Up by Larry Stolman and Cynthia Graves. There's another one, which is a little bit harsher, I think, which is called Boomerang Kids, How to Live with Adult Children Who Return Home by Jean Davies Okimoto and Phyllis Jackson Stiegel. And then there's another book called Cutting the Cord, 8 Secrets to Coping When Your Children Come Home.
Well, this has certainly been a big help for all of us who need to discuss this problem. And we are very grateful that, Maxine Penn, you have been able to give us your expertise and your time. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was fun.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 462 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.